Hello, everyone. Welcome to another honest conversation on a topic that's on the minds of many, yet one that few are willing to discuss openly. We're going to have a very interesting conversation. My name is Leo Spiegler. I have with me two great people. I'll introduce them in a second. We want to say that open and say that the world today is struggling with problems and upheavals in many areas. There's no denying that. And once again, Jews are at the forefront. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. Many argue that there's an unanswered Jewish question that needs to be discussed. And I'm interested personally in trying to get to the bottom of what's happening. And this is really the purpose of these talks. With me today is Catholic scholar and author E. Michael Jones. Hello.
Hello.
Jones, you are a PhD in American literature. You authored dozens of books about the influence of Jews on the Catholic Church, on the media, on culture, the effects of the revolutionary nature of Jews on human society. You've written extensively on the topic. Also with me today is Dr. Michael Lightman. You're a PhD in biocybernetics and also arguably the world's foremost authority on authentic wisdom of Kabbalah. And in the last few years, your teachings and writing is focused on the role of the Jewish people and the root cause of anti-Semitism. And I really want us to talk about today, again, not in the hope of convincing anyone of anything, but rather just to open up this topic. My goal is to collect as many expert opinions as possible, and this is an opportunity to do just that. So I'd like to start with both of you, and I'll get to you first, Dr. Jones, and ask, really, I mean, when you think about it, is there a Jewish problem, as some people may say? Is there such a thing as Jewish problem? And maybe shortly you can say, you know, what is it, what you think it is?
Okay. This is not the first time that the world has talked about the Jewish problem or the Jewish question. The first time was during the 19th century. Karl Marx wrote a book, a short essay called "Zur Judenfrage" on the Jewish question. The Jewish question began in the 19th century with Napoleon emancipating the Jews. Napoleon then conquered Europe, and he spread the emancipation of the Jews throughout basically every country that he conquered. The emancipation of the Jews meant that the Jews were no longer to be confined to ghettos, that they were going to be on an equal status with everyone else. What followed over the period of the 19th century was a series of revolutions. The beginning was, of course, the French Revolution. That led to Napoleon's emancipation of the Jews. And then you had the Revolution of 1830, 1848, 1870, and so on up to the Bolshevik Revolution. Okay? After the Revolution of 1848, a man by the name of Wilhelm Marr was completely disillusioned with the failure of that revolution. He was angry at the Jewish role the role that the Jews played in the revolution in Hamburg. He felt that the Jews betrayed the revolution in Hamburg, and he ended up writing a book called the Sieg des Judentums über das Christentum. This is the man who created the term anti-Semite. Wilhelm Marr was a revolutionary. He hated the church. He wanted a new way to talk about Jews. He didn't want to talk about them in any type of religious way. He was also living in a world where everyone was talking about biology as the determinative factor in life. And so he created a term called anti-Semitism, which basically meant that the Jews had DNA that controlled their behavior and made them antisocial. This is the classic definition of anti-Semitism. It is, if this is what anti-Semitism is, then I am not an anti-Semite. I have to say this all the time. I do not believe that there is any type of biological determination that controls Jewish behavior. I believe that the Jews have free will just like everyone else in this world. So my entry into this issue came in around 2003. I had edited a magazine for almost 30 years at that point. And suddenly I watched the United States being dragged into a war in the Middle East that was against the interest of the people of the United States by a group of people known as neoconservatives. Neoconservatives were people, the father of neoconservatism was a man by the name of Irving Kristol. He was a Trotskyite in the 1930s, and he was a conservative in the 1990s. What I realized was that political definitions could not define neoconservatism. This was, everyone knew that it was a Jewish political movement. Everyone knew that the United States was being dragged into war because of Israel, for the benefit of Israel. And no one was allowed to say anything. No one was allowed to talk about Jews, because over this period of time, anti-Semitism, the term anti-Semitism, had expanded basically to what is the current definition. Okay, the current definition is anyone who criticizes a Jew is an anti-Semite.
But if I may, Dr. Jones, I want to focus on the problem. Forget about the characteristics and the definitions, but really, is there a problem or a question regarding this specific tiny grouping of people out of all of human society that has an improportionate amount of influence, a profound influence on the world, has had it for thousands of years? Right. Is there an issue? And if yes, what it is, if you could say shortly, because I want to go to Dr. Lightman as well.
Right. So this prompted me to write the book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. The issue is, which allows me to take this back to the beginning, which is the Jew is, it's a religious issue. It's a theological issue. The Jew is a theological construct. It's not a racial construct. So what I'm saying is that the turning point came at the time of Christ. Jesus Christ arrives on this earth. He claims that he is the Messiah. The Jews have to accept him or reject him. The Jews, as a people, reject Jesus Christ as the Messiah. He ends up being crucified. What I'm saying here is that by rejecting Jesus Christ, the Jews rejected Logos, which is the Greek term for reason. It's also the Greek term for Jesus Christ. In rejecting Logos, they rejected the order of the universe. And in rejecting the order of the universe, they became revolutionaries. And this is what the Jews have been for the past 2,000 years. They have been revolutionaries. And the main cause of the Jewish question, if you want to talk about both in the 19th century now, has been Jewish participation in revolutionary movements. Okay, throughout the 19th century, Bolshevism was a Jewish movement, a messianic Jewish movement. In the United States after World War II, as the Jews became prominent, they became involved in every single revolutionary movement after that period of time. This I'm saying, is the cause of the animosity toward Jews now throughout the world.
Okay, the revolutionary Jew. Okay.
It's their participation in these revolutionary movements. For example, like gay marriage, pornography, sexual revolution, Wilhelm Reich's program for the corruption of the Catholic Church. This is what I'm talking about.
Okay, so I'm summing up just for the sake of our viewers. So the main point is that Jews are involved in various revolutions, political, cultural, economic. They're behind those revolutions, and that's what creates animosity against them. Dr. Lightman, I want to turn to you as someone who's been studying, you know, nature, the systems of nature, and someone who speaks from the perspective of the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah. What does Kabbalah have to say about the Jewish problem? Is there a problem? What is the problem?
There is a problem. I agree with that. And I do agree there is a problem, and it's not just the 19th or 18th century, or the times of Napoleon, or even the times of Jesus Christ, which is 2,000 years ago. This is an even more ancient problem. And this is a problem that is way beyond political opinions, philosophy, this or that perspective of reality. It has to do with the structure of nature itself. We have to understand there is something much more profound and much more concrete here. Jews originate in a specific gene of the human population, a specific group, that is. I call it a gene, but it is a force that pushes them towards continuous revolutionary action, and it gradually appears through them. Now, the fact that it manifests in our world in different ways, you can even relate everything that's happening in the world or just the bad things towards the Jewish people. That depends on the person looking at it, the perception of the person who's observing the phenomenon. However, Jews as a group originate in ancient Babylon, ancient Mesopotamia. About 3,800 years ago in ancient Babylon, many people were focused. Essentially, the cradle of human civilization existed back then in ancient Mesopotamia. And also the Torah, the original sources that are the same for Catholics and Jews back then, tells us that in that time, all nations that were centralized in ancient Mesopotamia, they lived in a comfortable way between them. But then what happened was the eruption of the human ego, and that caused division. That was that ancient crisis of ancient Mesopotamia. And then what happened is that there was one of the main priests there who was involved in the people's spirituality. His name was Abram back then. The Torah talks about that. And he told people, we have to learn how to rise above the human ego, otherwise we're going to kill each other. And then some people joined him and understood what he was about, and a big part of the people didn't listen and didn't follow him. And so Abraham took that portion of the Babylonian population and united them into a group. And he determined that the future of human development is only about connection and unity, or what's called love thy friend as thyself. And then that group of people began to exist according to that maxim, according to these principles. And they eventually went to the land of Canaan, which is the place of the land of Israel today. And they began to establish themselves as a group of people who are working on connections, on love, on positive human connections. And through that, they discovered the positive force of nature itself that is in parallel to a negative force. We exist in a nature of self-reception, in a nature of egotism. We want to enjoy this world or the next world, but we are self-centered in our thinking, and it's a law of nature. However, in addition to that force of self-centeredness, there is another force in nature, which I refer to as a positive force. And this force can resonate with us if we begin to work on our positive connections. That's what Abraham taught that group. And they began to unify around that. They began to carry out that method of love thy friend as thyself, which basically means positive connection above differences, above all that negative force. It's as if you exist on two levels. Below the lower plane is the egoistic nature of the human being that always is self-centered and looks at others negatively and critically. And above that, they worked on constantly, consciously building higher positive relationships as if discovering their human connection on a higher level. When they began to do that, they started discovering a hidden part of nature, a hidden part of reality that is hidden from all of us. They referred to that area of reality, to that layer of reality, as godliness, as the one force that governs all of interconnected nature. And that's what the Bible that they wrote in the beginning was based on, which later the later Jews received, and then it evolved into Christianity, and also Muslims accepted the writings based on the same source. So the group that eventually arrived to that place where Israel is now, they went through an entire evolution of working with their ego that was constantly rising as they were constantly working on rising above it. And in that dynamic, they would constantly discover, according to their conscious effort of positive connection, above the ego, they discovered that higher force of nature. And that's what the Torah is based on. The Torah is actually a code, a book that is describing how to rise above the human ego and discover the positive force of nature. The negative force is the human ego, and the positive force is the force of the greater scheme of nature. And that's the whole thing. Now, because they acquired a revelation of that higher positive force, that impression, that recollection remained in them, and it greatly changed their nature. And since then, that group, which turned into a nation, it basically consists of two forces, negative and positive, that are in constant conflict. And that's why they're constantly looking for something and revolutionizing things, even though they fell from their attainment and awareness of that positive force of nature. That happened, truthfully, 2,000 years ago. And they detached from the positive force, and then they only followed, from since then, they only follow the negative force of the human ego, but they also had what I call that gene, that impression from their higher attainment. And the conflict between the two is what drives their behavior and what is constantly happening from then to this time. Now, there's a whole host of details here, but obviously we can't cover all of that. So
yeah,
let's kind of stop there. However, because they began to behave according to these two forces that work within them, that made them very different from all the neighboring nations, the Romans, the Greeks, all of those ancient nations that existed back then around them in that whole area of the Mediterranean area. And the main thing that has happened is that after they fell from that attainment of that positive force, which happened about 2,000 years ago, this is what is the meaning, the true meaning of the destruction of the temple. So that nation then divided. Some of them accepted the Christianity. Others accepted other directions. But essentially, they dispersed in many different directions. And then religions were created, including Judaism of today. It started back then. Both Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, in a matter of a few hundred years, separating them at most. And since then, we're having problems. Surely the problems originate in the Jews. I agree with you, 100%. You can essentially blame them for everything in the world. But why? Because they possess that force and that spiritual gene that has to do with the correction of the world. If they work to unify all of humanity to a single nation, not that they all become like them or like me, no. This is something called love covers all crimes and differences, meaning that we're not supposed to just work with the egoistic nature of man. We're supposed to build a higher, a sort of umbrella of collective peace and wholeness and love between people. That is the essence of the wisdom of Kabbalah, and that's the true Judaism, where it came from. But I'll tell you that no Jews, the vast majority of Jews in the world today don't even know about what I'm telling you. No one is teaching that. The Jews are not conscious of this. And it only exists among a handful of individuals. I would say there's a few thousand people in the world at most who are aware of what I'm saying. There is a portion of the wisdom of Kabbalah that talks about how to unify the whole of reality, the whole of humanity. And part of it infiltrated, permeated Sufism, which is very small part of the Arab population. And some of it went into Christianity, but most of them lost that as well since ancient Christianity. So today, except for literally a few hundreds of Kabbalists who still hold on to the method of uniting above the egoistic differences, besides that, the world is in egoistic chaos and everyone has their own methods, and divisions and separation is on the rise. I also did a PhD in philosophy and Kabbalah back then, so I'm very familiar with what I researched, and that's what I'm telling you about. There are many books that Dr. discuss Lachman, this, but no one really knows them.
Dr. Lachman, I would like to
yes.
Yeah, I would like to. This is fascinating, and I'm curious. There's that point in history that you refer to, and also Dr. Jones, you also talk about that time about 2,000 years ago. What has changed in your mind? Does anything that Kabbalah speaks of, does it resonate with the teachings that you have studied and that you write about? Are there any parallels or things that add up?
There's just one condition in term that people need to realize according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, and that is what's called love thy friend as thyself. It is human connection, but it also explains that this human connection cannot happen unless it happens between people who understands that it happens above the human nature of ego, and that's that self-centeredness and hatred that evolves from it. These people who are practicing that, they are actually called the Jews, the original Jews, or Israel. Israel comes from the combination of two words, Yashar El, straight towards the godly force. But because the Jews are not following that, and they're not realizing that higher human connection, and that's what they present to the world, so subconsciously, instinctively, the world has this negative sentiment towards the Jews. That's the true cause of anti-Semitism. That's the root cause. That's why a lot of people don't know why, but they hate the Jews. And the more we're going to evolve in human society, that hatred will resurface and resurge. And that's because those Jews have to rise to a higher level of human connection and thus help the entire world rise to a higher spiritual degree. Where I'm not talking about Messiah in the messianic sense. According to Kabbalah, Messiah refers to a force, a higher force that helps human society evolve from the corporeal ego to a higher level of connection and bestowal. And that's something that the Jews have to provide, to deliver. So I understand the hatred and the anti-Semitism towards Jews. I justify it. I'm saying it's right. It's right that they're hated, but it's because they're not fulfilling their destiny, their role in the structure of reality. But that is the role, and that's the goal, that they have to make that connection happen and then lead the way for the whole world. And then a higher force, a godly force for everyone will be revealed. I'm not talking about Jesus or Muhammad or anyone else. It is a single force of nature of the whole of reality, the upper force, and it's essentially a force of love and connection.
Okay,
so that's what the wisdom of Kabbalah teaches. The wisdom of Kabbalah comes from about 6,000 years ago from someone called Adam.
Dr. Lachman, I want to stop you before we go too far in the past. I want to hear Dr. Jones.
Sorry.
No, because it was a lot to take in. I want to hear Dr. Jones if any of those things resonate as far as that issue that, you know, that characterizes the Jews of today. Any of those things that Kabbalah refers to, do you find parallels in what you studied?
Yeah, I found myself agreeing with what Dr. Lightman was saying. We both agree that something happened 2,000 years ago. something derailed history at that point. It turned into a new stream. What I'm saying is that when the Jews rejected Jesus Christ, they became revolutionaries. Well, that's exactly what happened in 70 AD. The Jews rose up against the Romans. The Romans came and destroyed the temple. At this point, the Jews could no longer fulfill their covenant. They did not have a temple. They did not have a priesthood, and they did not have a sacrifice. So they created a new religion. I agree with that. The new religion is the religion of the synagogue, the religion of the Talmud. This religion again led to revolution. Simon Bar Kokhba, 60 years later, again rebelled against Rome, and that led to the dispersal of the Jewish people throughout the Mediterranean basin. And at that point, they became messengers of revolution. I think we largely agree. I agree that the Torah is the word of God. I agree that the Jews were God's chosen people. What I agree that the animosity here is coming from what we would call Jewish revolutionary activity. Because they rejected their true Messiah, they have a compulsion to find other messiahs, and they become involved in messianic political movements. This is not just my theory, it's Rabbi Louis Israel Newman said the same thing. The Jews have been involved in every single revolutionary movement in Europe for the past 2,000 years. It started immediately after the death of Christ. It has perdured up to this day. And what you have here is now Jews using terms like Tikkun Olam, okay? The Jews are going to heal the world. But what it turns out to be is the Tikkun Olam becomes a license to basically destroy the culture of the countries that have taken them in as citizens. This is the main cause of resentment. This is the main cause of anti-Jewish animosity at this point.
Do you think that they have some sort of a conspiration, that they're deliberately trying to ruin the countries that they're in order to, say, impose their control over the whole of humanity?
Yes, I do.
Do you think that, what do you mean by Messiah? Please explain to me, what do you mean? Do you refer to it as a human that can become, should become the leader of humanity and leads them? What can such a human being do? Why is that? I agree that Jesus Christ was a messenger of a certain level of human connection. Love thy friend as thyself, right? Love of all. Love of all people. He said that he referred to the upper force, the higher force, as love, that we have to be in love towards each other in the same way, just like the higher force. Why don't we see that today among Christians? Why don't Christians deliver that example to the world? Where is that Messiah? So he existed then, and just like he fell among the Jews, he fell in general. So there was some attraction to bring back something that came from the days of Abraham, but it didn't succeed eventually.
The Messiah is the Son of God. That's how he identified himself when he was at this earth. His mission was to open the gates of heaven, which had been closed to mankind ever since Adam fell, since Adam ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He opened those gates and he allowed all of mankind now to enter into heaven if they followed his way, which entailed now baptism. So even the Jews could be restored to this state if they accepted baptism. This was the message that Peter said to the Jews.
What do you mean to accept? What does it mean to accept baptism?
Baptism means accepting Jesus Christ as the Messiah. It's the physical sign that you accept Jesus, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He is the Redeemer of mankind. and the man who opened the gates.
What is that sign? Let's say that a person stands and asks, what am I supposed to do in order to accept Jesus Christ as a Messiah? What does that mean? What's the concept of a Messiah? What's the concept of Jesus? What is God? What does it mean, the Son of God? Isn't it about love thy friend as thyself? That needs to be accepted as the supreme law for all of humanity?
Yes, God is the Logos. This is what St. John said. The Genesis begins, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. The new Genesis, the New Testament begins, in the beginning there was Logos, and Arche en ha Logos, and Logos is God. So what St. John did was combine the Greek attempt to understand God by natural reason with the Hebrew attempt to, who were given revelation. God spoke directly to the Hebrews when Moses was on in front of the burning bush and he asked God who he was. God said, I am who am. So Christianity combined these two things, and now the calling of the of Israel is now open to the entire world. So God is Logos. God is reason. God is a physical manifestation of the order of the universe that has existed from all eternity.
What is that Logos? What is the principle of that order of the universe? Without names, no terms, just what is the phenomenon? What is this, the actual phenomenon that you call the order of the universe? What's the order of the universe? What sustains the system of the whole of nature, if not mutual reciprocal connection between all the elements, still vegetative, animate, and human? They all have to be in a mutual harmony, or you can call it love, inclusive connection and love. That's how nature works. So why can't we be connected like nature?
Go ahead. Yes, we can. But you have to understand there is first reason. There is first the rationale, the order of the universe. And then as we come to a deeper understanding of the order of the universe, we understand that God is love. That love is in many ways
love.
Logos in action. Love is Logos in action through history.
So I don't want to relate that higher concept of love to any human being, flesh and blood, whether it's Son of God, Grandson of God, Jesus, or anyone else. I don't want to tie it to anyone. I live right now without any belief of something that I was told about 2,000 years ago. Not Jews, not Christians, not Muslims. Unrelated. I relate to the greater force of nature, which is essentially a force of love. How can we become similar to that force through the relationship between us? And if we begin to do that, we will begin to discover the true order of the universe. Otherwise, I'll be trying to push my Messiah onto you, you'll try to push your Messiah onto me, and then we'll fight and just divide and go into wars again.
So this is actually, it's a great time. We're kind of drawing towards the, not the end yet, but the final act, which is fascinating. But I really want to bring us to practicalities. So we all agreed there was something happened 2,000 years ago. We, you know, this group of people left a certain path, a certain attitude, a certain right connection, as Kabbalah defines it. They left a certain path, and that brought about a whole range of issues in the world that we see it in cultures, in politics, every area of human endeavor. We then also talked about, you mentioned that love is that principle of the divine in action, whatever the name we attach to it, doesn't matter, but that is that governing principle. Kabbalah speaks about it, Christianity speaks about it. The question is now, what is the solution? What can we practically do tomorrow? People will see this talk tomorrow. I want to hear from both of you, so I want us to give time for each. What is the practical solution for this problem, for this impasse? How do we bring the world to experience this principle of love? In practice, again, I'm thinking of the typical average viewer. I'm not religious. I'm not philosophical. I live my life. I want a better world. I have a feeling that the Jews have something to do with it. What do we do next? What is the solution? Who wants to start? Please go ahead.
I would just like to say that the church, the Catholic Church, was in this position when the Roman Empire collapsed. They realized that the Jews were not going to go away. They were not going to convert. They had to have some type of modus vivendi with the Jews. And the answer to this was a doctrine called sicut Judaeus non. This is basically a two-part doctrine that was basically the teaching of the church on the Jews for 1500 years. On the one hand, no one has the right to harm the Jew. No one has a right to disrupt the Jews' religious services. No one has a right to desecrate the Jewish cemeteries. On the other hand, the Jew has to respect the culture of Christian countries and does not have a license to destroy their culture, to ridicule your faith and undermine their morals. Okay, this was a more or less successful modus vivendi that lasted for 1500 years. It lasted in the United States up until 1965, okay, with when the Jews broke the code in Hollywood. At this point, the country was inundated with pornography, and we have had the result was a disruption of the social order. I'm saying that if I said this in Iran, I was in Mashhad. There was a Rabbi David Weiss of Neder Eichhardt. He doesn't like Israel, but whatever that. I said, if the Jews followed the Torah, there would be no problem. The Jews are in rebellion against the Torah. This is these revolutionary movements that are causing disruption throughout the world. They have more power than they've had ever in human history. They have power to disrupt your culture, and that is going to cause problems. So I'm saying if we take a step back to this traditional modus vivendi, I think we could both get along much better.
So you're saying, so before we go to Dr. Lightman, you're saying a sort of a restoration of this mutual agreement between the different religious views, let's say, a restoration of certain moral codes, which for me, it sounds, you know, morals are very much geographical, relative. But let's say there was some sort of an agreement that we can all agree on. We say, okay, I will respect you. You will respect me. This is what I like to do. This is what you like to do. Let's not get into each other's space and then we'll be friends. So this is your kind of solution to the issue. This will make the world less hostile to Jews and bring the world to a more peaceful state right now, according to you?
I'm saying the Jews have to break their addiction to revolutionary politics, messianic.
Is there a revolution rehab somewhere that we can all...
We will work on a 12-step program for the revolutionary Jews.
Okay, Dr. Lightman, what is your practical solution?
First of all, I completely agree with my friend Mike, and I would like to see a great revolution happening among Jews. And you're right; they should forget about Hollywood and other dirty businesses that they're dealing with and engaged in. I agree with him in that respect, that this isn't the right path, and the world suffers from it, and Jews themselves. However, the hatred towards the Jews is not because since 1960 or 65, they started occupying Hollywood, etc. We also can talk about the Crusades and the times when Jews were murdered and burnt and killed from country to country to country, Spain, Portugal, England, Germany, all those European countries, the ghettos they lived in, etc. All of that, you know, it's as if it just went by. I'm not, let's just put it aside. Let's not get into all of those those harsh things we went through under the authority of the Holy Church. Let's talk about today. I disagree with the Jews. Believe me, that's true. I also don't agree with the Christians. And I also don't agree with the Muslims. I don't agree with all of them. Why? Because all of them simply reside within the human ego, meaning that they're only operated, if each and every nation is operated by their human ego, which means they have their own God, their own Messiah, their own messenger, which really originates in the distorted human perception. What I'm talking about is nature. We know that nature, the more you study it, the more you see that it's all interconnected. It's an integrated, interdependent system, meaning that all elements and all parts of nature are needed, necessary, and they're connected to each other and in some way contributing to each other. We can see this on the still level of nature, the animate level of nature, and so on, besides the human. Because the human follows not just egoistic instincts, but also, in addition to what's happened to those instincts, that ego is developing, it's evolving. And from generation to generation, that ego is willing to destroy what happened before, what existed before. And that's, by the way, is besides the Jews. It's happening everywhere. Meaning that throughout the world, the human ego needs to be restrained. It needs to be corrected. That, I think, is where we can find consensus. The human ego is the driving force that distorts our life, that breaks down society. Now the question is, how can we do that? I'm saying there is a method. Death method can be referred to as love covers all those egoistic crimes. For that, we have to put aside all of the kinds of messiah and the kinds of religions and the kinds of doctrines. Look at what's happening in Europe between the Muslims and the Christians there. You could say that it's driven by the Jews also, but it doesn't matter. If we want to find wholeness, find peace, find greater connection and common humanity, then we have to follow something else, something that Kabbalah explains, which, by the way, all the Jews disagree with, because they are indeed more egoistic than the rest of the world. If you look deeper online at what's written about me, you'll see a lot of criticism, a lot of cursing happening from Jews against me in a horrible way. Why? Because they don't want to initiate that connection. And that's why the world even subconsciously hates them. But it's not because of this or that Messiah. It's because they do hold the key to human happiness, to a better life for all of humanity through higher human connection. And they don't use and reveal the method. And most of the Jews themselves don't even know about this. Only us, meaning the people who engage in the wisdom of Kabbalah, which is the authentic, original nature coming from Adam Rishon, the one who wrote the first book of the wisdom of Kabbalah. It's called Raziel HaMalach. Then Abraham, who wrote the book of creation, which is also a Kabbalistic book. These books were written before the Bible. So no one agrees with the Kabbalists. I'm talking only from the side of the Kabbalists as a representative of Kabbalah only. And I'm saying this, the key to a better future of the world exists only in that ancient method of Kabbalah, and it's hidden in the people of Israel, the Jews, who we don't even know about it, possessed by the Kabbalists. This method has to be extracted, revealed, publicized, so that all people can learn how to connect by the principle of love thy friend as thyself. And no method is doing that. Show me, please. Show me where the Christians, or whether it's the Catholics or the Protestants or whatever, show me where they do it. Show me where they realize it daily and consciously. Show me where the Muslims are doing that. Show me where the Jews are doing that. No one is working on that. No one, meaning the method of human connection, universal method of human connection, no one wants to do that. Why? Because the human ego prevents that. And rising above the ego, overcoming the human ego is something we don't want. So we need to practice the method of overcoming the human ego, which means connecting above all differences. It doesn't matter what Messiah each one believes in. Above all differences, above all egoistic differences, we have to unite. And then we will discover a higher level of reality, which we're in right now. It's just hidden from us. We will discover that we live in a world that godliness is here. The upper force is right here. It is a force of connection, connecting and driving all of nature. And then we will become a part of nature rather than being opposite to nature.
So, if I understand correctly, we live in a system. The system, there are forces operating in it that are devoid of labels, of emotional attachments, but there are forces. These forces have to work a certain way, be arranged a certain way. That way, that principle is the principle of love, and this is what we have to try and practice. The question, just final, because we're really out of time, Dr. Jones, do you think this is something that can happen? Do you think that humanity, are you an optimist? Do you think there's a way to kind of somehow meet in that principle of love?
Yeah, I'm saying that the system is called Logos. It's God created the universe. The universe has an order to it, okay? It is our duty as rational creatures to conform our minds to the rational order of the universe as a manifestation of God. That's what Logos is. I'm saying that that is possible, and I'm saying it's not only possible, but it's inevitable, because God is also the author of human history, and God cannot create evil, which means the creator of time is going to ensure that there is going to be a good outcome to the time that he created. How this comes about is within God's mind, but we have examples in the Bible. The story of Joseph in the Bible is an example of what I'm talking about. It's what Hegel would call the cunning of reason. The brothers sold Joseph into slavery. Joseph rises to a power under the Pharaoh. A famine breaks out in Israel. The brothers have to come to Joseph now. And Joseph reveals himself to the brothers, and he says, "The evil that you intended to do to me has been turned by God's power into good." That is the force I'm talking about. That is known as divine providence. And that force will triumph in the end, but it will not triumph in spite of, it will triumph in spite of evil, but it will not negate our reason. Our reason is to find out how to implement that force in human history. That's what I'm talking about.
And can we say that implementation of that force entails loving one another?
Of course it does. Of course it does. I am not denying that at all. Love is Logos in action.
All right. Dr. Jones, Dr. Lightman, our time is up. This was fascinating. I feel like we could, you know, hear more of this. Maybe we'll have an opportunity in the future if you will agree to meet with us again. But this was really eye-opening. For the sake of our viewers, please leave your questions, comments in the section below. Subscribe to the channel. And we hope to see more conversations like that, more honest conversations. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman, Dr. Jones. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you. Shalom.